discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
For one of the funniest men in America, his career as a professional inducer of laughter may never have begun if not for a malfunctioning theater projector. As a Michigan youth, Michael Jr. took the opportunity that night to get up in front of the folks and entertain a theater full of moviegoers with his first stand-up act. The rest, as they say, is history. Today, he's one of the most in-demand funny men in America, with credits including The Tonight Show and Jimmy Kimmel.
And to be politically correct is work. I'm at a coffee shop. So a white dude in front of me, he orders a coffee. The lady was like, "How would you like it?" He looked back at me and was like, African-American, please. I was like, cool. Let me get the Caucasian mocha. Let me get that.
But at his core, he's a follower of Jesus, and he uses humor to draw people to real joy. In a special conversation on the road, we get started by asking Michael Jr. how his laughter-filled life is progressing today.
Like a breath at a time, which is awesome. One in and then one out. So it's pretty cool. How about you? Same way, I hope.
Well, now that you start talking about it, though, I'm afraid I'm going to start thinking about it, because it's easy to breathe when you're not thinking about it. But like when you start thinking about it, that's when it gets scary.
Okay, now I'm concerned. No. So thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate it, Ryan. This is going to be fun. This is cool, man. I like what you're doing.
Oh, it's a blessing to have you here. It really is. You're a funny man. And I'm sure you're aware of this, but I hadn't known before I started Googling you in earnest. You share a name with a Belgian pop singer.
I did find that out, but people were different. He sings, and yeah. He's Belgian. And
right.
I eat the waffles, but other than that, I've never been a Belgiumite before. So
so let's say you're listening right now and you share the tragic distinction of not having ever experienced the humor of Michael Jr. in person before. Michael, to that individual, what is it like to experience an evening of mirth and meaning with Michael Jr.?
Okay, so the 10,000-foot view, they could anticipate the building looking really small because they're so high and the altitude is really high up there, so they probably wouldn't hear much and uh-huh. they wouldn't see anybody. But if you zoom down to probably like a 6-foot view, man, we're gonna have a blast. Like they can anticipate laughter. Like at my events, you know, it's the same type of comedy I've done on the Tonight Show, Comedy Central, all these late night television shows, but there's always a little more that happens than just funny. So I'm always excited to see what that is, mm-hmm. depending on what the audience, like kind of what happens in the moment. So no event that we do is ever the same. And I have a blast. It's so much fun. It's not just comedy, but it's of course funny, but then the whole family can be, you can bring the dog if you want to. I mean, you can bring him, he got to buy a ticket, but yeah, so it'll be a great time.
Well, that's good to know. You know, if anybody was considering that, it's good to know the dog would need a ticket as well. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I've had dogs at my shows before, which is a little weird, but it's okay. I guess that's truly, when they say a man's best friend, they really took this all away. He bought him a ticket and he sat in the chair and he howled the whole time. So I don't know if that was a laugh or he was just depressed. I don't know what's going on. But
well, what was your sense of it?
We're going to have a blast.
Did you get the sense that the creature was enjoying the experience? Could you tell?
You know what? I actually did, because at one point the lady held the dog up in the air and she was laughing, and I feel like maybe if she's happy, the dog's happy too. You know what I'm saying? He didn't run away. He didn't pee on anybody. It worked out, man.
When you begin on a new tour like this, going all across the country, do you have a fresh vision and sort of a fresh purpose each time that's unique to that set of shows? Is that something you try for?
Yeah, absolutely. The last tour we were doing was called Bringing the Funny, and now we're moving into the More Than Funny tour. So, yeah, we do have a, we are planning on kind of surprising the audience in a way that I don't think they would expect from a comedy show. So it's going to be really fun. The audience will have fun for sure, but I am also going to enjoy watching the expressions on people's faces as they experience what's going to happen.
That's so cool.
And it's all on the up and up. There'll be kids there. One of my events, I remember recently I had probably a 7-year-old girl and then probably a 90-year-old lady with an oxygen machine hooked up to her, sitting next to each other, laughing equally hard. So it's always, that's just a great snapshot that I have of the type of people that come to my show. So,
oh, that's really cool.
You know, they say laughter is good like a medicine. So technically I could be a doctor, technically. So it'll work out.
Your comedy origin story is nothing short of spectacular. You are sitting in this crowded Grand Rapids, Michigan movie theater. The projector malfunctions. Yep. And you basically discover your purpose in this sense. How on earth did that play out?
Well, me and some of my friends were sitting there. We were fresh out of college, and all of them had plans to go off to college. They're like, Michael Jr., what are you doing after school? I was like, I'm going to go make a sandwich. I don't know. What are you talking about? So I didn't have any huge plans, but then we were in this movie, and me and a friend, we made a deal that we wouldn't curse anymore. You're young. That's all you did, right? So our deal was if he heard me curse, say any bad words, he could hit me in the chest hard as he wanted to and vice versa. And the guy could hit really hard. So we're sitting there watching the movies, and the screen literally goes blank in the middle of the movie. And my friend, he was a German exchange student, he said, I dare you go tell a joke. So I go up there, you know, I'm 17, 18 years old. If you dare me to do something, I'm going to do it. So I go up there, and the only joke I knew at the time was a dirty joke. But my friend was there, so I couldn't do a dirty joke, so I had to rewrite the joke. I had about 12 seconds from the time I left my chair to the time I was in front of everyone to rewrite this joke in my head so it could be a clean joke. So I told the joke, and all of these people laughed. And then security came running down and kicked me out. I'd already sat down, and they were looking for me. And they said, if that young – and this white lady who I didn't even know her, she stood up and said, if you kick that young man out, I want my money back. These bikers with long hair and tattoos, and then these black people, all of these people stood up and came to my defense just because I gave them my talent. Mm-hmm. So in retrospect, I look at that and I say, wow, that was like God giving me a glimpse of what he asked me to do. So it was really, looking back at it, it was a pretty powerful moment.
That's an amazing story. And you know, you have the big credits now. I mean, you've been on The Tonight Show, Jimmy Kimmel, so many other amazing opportunities. But I can't help but wonder, you know, is it tough to break in at first? Just how hard was it to get your foot in the door in those early days?
Yeah, you know, my biggest break was, you know, The Tonight Show, Comedy Central, and all that stuff is cool. But my biggest break actually isn't what a lot of people would think. My big break, I was at a club in Los Angeles, and right before I got on stage, I just simply, like, I had a little change in mindset. Actually, I did a prayer, and suddenly I had this change in mindset. And that mindset shift that took place was, instead of trying to get laughs from people, I felt like I was supposed to give them an opportunity to laugh. That right there changed everything. Because now I'm not looking to take, I'm looking for an opportunity to give. If people just get a hold of this, it will change your life. Like, it literally will. So even in terms of a big break or grinding to hit it real big, my mindset shifted to what can I give to people? And then all of this other stuff just starts showing up as a result of it. So I think it was like Zig Ziglar who said, if you can help enough people get what, and the best way to get what you want is by helping enough other people get what they want.
Wow.
So that's really my mindset. So that's why all the shows, all the events, it's completely different wherever I go, because I'm literally asking the question before I get there and before I hit the stage, what can I give to these people? They were going to laugh, but what can I give them? So that's why it's different every time. So that understanding was the biggest break I've ever had with comedy.
Wow, that's amazing. That is the voice of Michael Jr. If you're a person who loves to laugh, you probably already recognize it. He's a celebrated comedian with credits that include The Tonight Show, Jimmy Kimmel, tours all across America, and we're here on the road for Faith Radio. You've talked about how everyday observations are really the bread and the butter of your comedy, and how they really help you gear your humor to your audience. But, you know, how does that work in practice? Do these joke ideas just kind of hit like lightning bolts as you go throughout a normal day, or can it be tougher than that?
Well, I get ideas all the time, and I write them down, and then I set time aside to actually develop the idea. So it all comes from everyday life, but the actual grind of developing it into something that can be presented in front of an audience who is expecting to laugh, that right there is a lot of work. So it just takes diligence and some discipline and some willpower and some creativity, put it all together, and then put a bunch of prayer around it, get up on stage, and wah to the la. Well, most of the time. Sometimes it's la wah. So just have to figure it out. And people just seem to respond to it in a really great way. So it can be a lot of work. Some people think comedians sleep for 14 hours.
Yeah.
And then eat some food and then get on stage. And no, it's a lot of work, a lot of preparation.
I mean, is there somebody that you were able to come alongside that could almost help teach you that process? Because it really does sound like a process, not like a lightning bolt. I mean, is that something you had to develop for yourself?
Well, as far as the process and the technique of developing the content, yeah, I had to kind of develop that myself. And there is techniques out there. But as far as the actual skill set or the timing and the understanding of comedy, a lot of that is just really natural. You can teach the technique, but probably not the gift. I do feel like the sense of humor is really a gift. And it came in the form of, some of it came in the form of a handicap. When I was a kid, I used to struggle with my reading. So I couldn't sound words out phonetically, so it caused me to look at things differently. So now, as an adult, I read just fine, but I still look at words and people and situations different, immediately almost. And that's where I find the funny from. So now it's a matter of finding those different ways of looking at things and writing it down and kind of mining for the funny. And then presenting it to the people in a way that's palatable so they can enjoy it and even tell someone and even come to the event.
That's a really cool way of looking at it. I really like the word palatable too, by the way. That is a great word.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is. I just saw it on this piece of paper. I don't know what it means. But.
You are a man of many comedic venues, and we've only really covered the traditional ones. I want to ask you about movies and books here in just a little bit, but how is generating laughter in church the same, and how is it a little bit different than some of your other venues, like maybe a comedy club or a concert hall?
Well, I did a performance. I was on Jimmy Kimmel's show, and during the break, he mentioned on, he said, you can catch more of Michael Jr. He'll be performing. Actually, the cue card actually said, so Jimmy Kimmel reads the cue card. I'm looking at the cue card, and he says, we'll be back with more Michael Jr. He'll be performing. He'll be doing a benefit concert for Zoe Christian Fellowship. That's what he said. But the word benefit wasn't actually on the card. It just said he'll be doing a comedy show at Zoe Christian Fellowship. So during the break, he was like, I was like, why do you say benefit? He was like, I don't know. It just seemed right. But it wasn't, because he said to me, how do you do comedy at a church? I was like, well, first you do the setup, and then you do the punchline. Yeah. So it's the same. It's really, really the same. It's just about where the person who is presenting it, what their experiences have been and how they interpret those experiences. And then, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So that stuff will come out. So when I first started doing comedy, I created a interior accountability. Any comedy that I do at a club has to be clean enough that I can do it at a church. Any comedy I do at a church has to be funny enough that I can do it at a club. So it created some accountability as far as quality and quantity, and it just kind of took off from there. So it's the same show wherever I go, whether I'm playing Vegas or churches or whatever the case is. It's the same show. I was performing where was that at the Laugh Factory on Sunset Strip in Los Angeles. And I did this joke that I used to do about Jesus' little brother. And it was hysterical. Everybody laughed, had a great time. And then afterwards, a guy who was toasted drunk, started disagreeing with me as I'm waiting on my car to show up about the divinity of Mary. I was like, dude, you are drunk, bro. Why are we having this conversation? What are we doing right now? It was hysterical. I'm like, you. Anyway, it was funny. So the jokes work everywhere across the board. So it's fun.
That's awesome. The funny man, Michael Jr., joins us today. The celebrated comedian, credits including The Tonight Show, Jimmy Kimmel, tours all across this great land of America. There are some amazingly funny Christian comedians out there these days. And I just wonder, It's always interesting to me to know, you know, as somebody who makes so many others laugh, who are those that make you yourself laugh?
From the Christian arena realm, you know who's really funny? There's a guy named Jason Earls, who you guys got to look up. He is hysterical. And then there's Dustin Nickerson, who's really funny. And then Tim Hawkins is really funny. Great dude. There's a lot of comedians out there who are doing comedy in a clean way that you can really grab a hold of and enjoy with your whole family. But Jason Earls is probably one of my favorites. But yeah, it's fun to enjoy consuming comedy as well when I can.
One of the, I know this isn't particularly sort of a ha-ha funny question, but it's fascinating to me how many comedians you'll talk to who explain that a lot of their best material has really come from the lowest moments of their life, and a lot of their failures have been the source of some of their best material. Does that hold true for you or not necessarily?
No, that's just always strange. That's not the case for me at all. I mean, my material comes from whatever happens around me that's kind of funny. And then the things that have hurt and the hurts from my life are, you know, I talk about having a hard time reading and struggling, but I'm past that. I'm better. I mean, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a testimony that I do, but I don't have to, like, I'm not up there crying. Yeah, my toe got cut off. Ooh, that was funny. I'm going to cut another toe off so I can get some more jokes. No, I need my toes. They're good. So that's not really all. I think what it is sometimes, like, when you have a relationship with God, like a serious one, like I try to dig in as much as I can, he allows you to pull those deep things out all the time in other areas. So I don't really have a lot of stuff at all that's off limits, and I'm constantly going deep with him. So I can find the funny in other areas, not just those dark areas or not. So it doesn't really seem to be that's a great question, but I haven't really experienced that for myself.
Oh, that's fascinating. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Well, so you're kind of a renaissance man because obviously you do the stand-up comedy in all these different venues, but now I understand you just finished working on a new movie called Selfie Dad, coming to theaters in the fall. Can you share a bit about the film and how you came to be involved in it?
I can. The reason I did this movie is because they pay money. And that's it. Yeah, that's really it. I don't even know what it's about. They just told me to say some stuff, and I did it. So, no. It's a really great film. I actually am the main character in the movie. Selfie Dad is about a guy who has kids. He loves his kids, but he used to be a comedian, and he feel like he missed his opportunity. And now his son he finds out that you can make money on YouTube, so he posts a few YouTube videos, and they explode. And then, because of his new fame, he kind of neglects his family. And then a friend says, maybe you should try reading this book. And the book is like a Bible. And he like, you tripping. I ain't reading a Bible. I'm the man. I'm hilarious. And then he finds out that maybe he should take some time and read this thing called the Bible. And it's a really cool, it's a really great story. And there's some really funny moments in it that just had to happen as a result of having a comedian on there. And the writers, the guy who wrote the script, Brad Silverman, great, great writer. I just think it's going to be a great, a really fun movie for people to go see.
That really does sound hilarious. Is there a place we can go to already to even follow along with the progress of the film?
You can. If you go to Selfie Dad's Facebook page, or check out SelfieDadTheMovie.com, maybe.
Awesome.
I'm just guessing. I haven't been to the website because I play Selfie Dad, so I kind of know what I'm doing. But, yeah, we're going to actually start ramping up the marketing in next month. So you're the very first radio outlet I've talked to about the movie. So,
hey.
Pretty cool.
I feel.
Yeah, I haven't even. That's why I wasn't prepared with those questions. But whatever. But the next radio outlet, I'll be ready. I'll be prepared. I'll be like, yeah, it's Selfie Dad. He's awesome. He drives around. Anyway, so you just got to water down. I don't know how to answer this question version.
No, that I enjoyed that immensely. I mean, if it gets even better, I wouldn't even know what to do if it got better than that.
Wow. I'm sure you figured it out, though.
The only word I can think of is tentacle. You're not an octopus. I'm sorry for saying tentacle.
Oh.
But.
No, tentacle's not bad.
Of your talent and abilities, you're also a best-selling children's book author. How did you come to that place?
Yeah. Well, I just came up with this book idea. And it's really a book about a little girl named Gracie who's on her way to the fun park and the car stops working. And the way I came up with this idea is, so the car stops working and the parts are complaining. They're like, the muffler's like, man, I'm exhausted. And the battery's like, be quiet, I'm in charge. Spark plug is like, you don't know me, I'm from under the hood. So all of these parts, none of them are doing their job, and they realize they have to work together if they're going to make any progress. And the father gets out the car, but you never see his face. And he says, why won't you do what I need you to do? I take care of you. I keep you covered and protected. I never let you go through more than you can stand. Mm-hmm. So the car parts hear this. So anyway, it's a book that teaches kids, and actually some adults as well, I find, enjoy the book. It teaches them the importance of playing your part, walking in purpose. And I'm just excited. It's called The Parts We Play is the name of the book. Parts We Play.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
Well, hey, I know that we've kept you even further than we said we would, so I want to let you get back to it. But if people are fascinated by your story and your heart and the laughter you generate, MichaelJR.com. Is that the best place to go, sir?
Yes. If you're fascinated, you can go there, or if you're just remotely curious. So either realm of the spectrum will be just fine. Go to MichaelJR.com. If you go to MichaelJr.com, it's a little boy selling vacuum cleaner. So don't spell it out, Junior. It's just MichaelJR.com.
And the Belgian pop star is still out there somewhere, too. We don't know what his website is.
Yeah, it's him. He's the one selling the vacuum cleaner. So,
hey, what a treat to get to know you, sir. You have been making me laugh for a long time, and I know you've been making many of us laugh. So it was just a real joy to get a window into who you are today. Thanks so much.
Yo, Ryan, you're awesome, man. Thanks, dude.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.
I was alive, but I wasn't living. A prisoner of my fear and shame. But when you find you've been forgiven, laughter will rise. A holy kind of praise. So I throw my head back.